Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star one on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star two if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, you may need to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. One moment while we poll for questions.
Well, while we're waiting for it for one second, there was just one sentence. I mean, there was more than one, but one that kind of stands out in my mind that just reminded me that discussing with the patients that things we can't control, there are things that we can't control, I think you said, but there are things, but they can control how they respond.
Right.
And right. I think that is actually a perception that you probably discuss with your patients all the time, and it just gives a different spin on it, doesn't it? Just that one
thought.
It
really does. And, you know, I mean, physiologically too. I mean, it changes things significantly, right? When you start looking at the proverbial glass is half full. You know, the blood pressure starts to drop. We're turning off that sympathetic nervous system and right and kind of eliciting more of the parasympathetic response, which is more kind of relaxed. And we open up the blood vessels no longer become constricted. We are now supplying oxygenated blood to tissues. And it's kind of, you know, they use it in a lot with pain management as well, things like meditation.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Andrew Weil and Mehmet Oz were kind of pioneers, and Dean Ornish, I think, too, is another one, who were these Western physicians who were, you know, educated in our medical schools here, but have really opened up to kind of more of a holistic and integrative medical aspects in their practice. But it's very interesting, the relaxation response, when you think of, you know, that was big research in the 1970s up at Harvard, was the ability to take nice, deep, diaphragmatic breaths. And the fact is, when you do that, you actually lower the heart rate, you lower the blood pressure. So, you know, we have an ability to actually control a lot of not only our body responses to things, but certainly having a grasp emotionally on how we're responding to things can make a huge difference on that attitude of I can or I can't.
I can't. No, you're absolutely right. I believe we have one question in queue, Doug.
Yes, our first question comes from the line of Dorothy Full. Please proceed with your question.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you both. I really enjoy these programs. And, Jen, I love the approach you've taken, giving us so much information from the neurobiology and the physiological responses. What I'd like to ask is, I've always wondered why some patients, you know, we use that colloquialism of some people have MS and other people the MS has them.
Right.
Why some seem to cope and others move on. You know, some people just are so stuck in it. So I really, my ears picked up when you talked about affirmations. Remember, and I'm afraid it's so many years ago, I cannot remember the citation for it, but I remember going to a program where they were talking about children who've grown up with enormous stresses, either poverty or physical illness or whatever, that the kids who were resilient, who seemed to come out psychologically unscathed, were the ones where their contribution was recognized.
Right.
And I'm thinking that, you know, sometimes families aren't able to give that kind of affirmation to the patient, but we certainly can. And I'm thinking that maybe that's why we see, like, such a robust placebo effect when people volunteer for a research study, because they're contributing and being recognized for the altruistic, wonderful thing they're doing. And I'm just wondering, in your experience and practice, if you've seen anything like that, where recognizing the person's contribution, not just, you know, within themselves, but they actually are contributing and to be valued for that, has made a difference.
Absolutely. And that's such a great point, Dottie. And that is really first of all, like I said, you have to have a relationship with the patient before you can kind of go deeper, because you want to be able to affirm them when they are having troubles, and you can say, listen, I've known you for however long, and you've seemed to exude or exhibit these types of character strengths. But that's also where that scale comes in really handy, when they are able to self-identify their character strengths as well. And then I keep a copy of that in my chart, so I can go back to that. And don't we all feel better when somebody acknowledges, like, wow, you really are good at this, or you did a great job with this, or you have the ability to do X, Y, or Z. We all work better, right, when we're kind of acknowledged and recognized. And I think all of the nursing work in adherence has really shown that, because when we're no longer prescriptive towards patients, and what I mean by that is saying, like, I am the expert, you do this, right? We recognize the patient as a powerful person and the ability to help heal themselves. And I always say that to patients first and foremost, is that I don't have any magic wand. I don't have the ability to make you better. You have the ability to make you better. I have information that I want to share with you based on the data and the evidence. But you and I, we need to work as a team, because your input, I don't know what I don't know, and if you don't tell me, I don't know. So it's absolutely imperative that we're working together, because you're going to be the one who ultimately has to take the medication and ultimately is going to determine whether you do well or not. And I really try to be careful about saying prognostically if they're going to do well, but psychologically how well they do. And look, what I find fascinating is that, and Dottie, you can add to this, is that I've had patients who are in wheelchairs who are physically very, very incapacitated, who are capable of amazing things. I think of when I was at Columbia, I had a woman who was pretty much a quadriplegic, only had the ability to really kind of use her blower to write. She was an attorney. She still practiced as a consultant. She was very, very high level and still did a lot. I even think of Janet Pierce and different people who've contributed significantly to the body of our work in MS and nursing and learning from our patients. And I think really coming to a place where you say to the patient, I'm open, you can teach me, is an affirmation, because you're letting them know that they're a very important part of the process. We're not just prescribing to them, right?
Sure. And I think it's sincere, Jen, when we are amazed by our patients and their families and, you know, with what they're able to live with so graciously in many cases and still really contribute to this world. When you were talking, I was also thinking, though, how, and maybe I'm just identifying too much, but how important it is also for us as nurses to get that same kind of affirmation, because we too see differences in resilience of some people who, you know, can go through the fire and come out the other side stronger. The people who seem to be able to say, oh, well, and get through it and move on. And I'm wondering if some of those same principles aren't helpful for us as we cope with our own stresses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think perspective, too. When you were saying, like, these children who've gone through atrocities and, I think the ability to say, well, it can always be better or it can always be worse, and kind of putting yourself in that median place where, okay, well, it's not the best, but it's not the worst, and I can figure this out, right? And I definitely think that helps, you know, just the idea of contextualizing things where, is it a crisis, or can I see that there's any opportunity in this? Is there an ability to grow from this in some way?
Or, as they say, another effing growth experience.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, and thank you for a wonderful program.
Thanks, Dottie.
Okay, thank you, Dottie. Jennifer, I'm going to have Doug solicit for another question.
Ladies and gentlemen, just as a reminder, it is *1 to ask a question. And our next question comes from the line of Eileen Scheid. Oh, looks like she took herself out. As a reminder, it is *1 to ask a question.
Eileen, I'm sorry if you're still on the line. I know that was a long-winded answer, so if you still have your question, please call back in.
And we did just get another one. Our next comes from Megan Weigel. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Megan.
Megan, are you on mute?
Hi. Are you guys there?
Hey.
Yes.
Yes, I was on mute because I had my Vitamix blending. thank you so much again for doing this talk. And I, for one, would be super interested in a more in-depth neurobiology talk because I think it's just fascinating. And I think it might have some interesting clues to how MS might start to begin with. But I second Dottie on that. When I heard you talk about resiliency for the first time, it came at like a really super perfect time in my life. And I really carried a lot back home to talk to patients about. And I try to use patients that are resilient, you know, as kind of advocates, and sometimes I'll have them call people, like call newly diagnosed people who I think are at risk for, you know, falling out of the tree, so to speak.
Right.
Because it's just incredible what they're just sort of built that way. But I think you're right. We can give people that aren't built that way the resources to use to become resilient. So thanks. I love this topic, and you're so great at it and passionate about it, and thank you.
Thanks. Well, Megan, just to point out, you actually, it's brilliant what you're doing because it's actually a duplicitous effect, right? So when you actually ask a patient, because you're acknowledging and affirming that they themselves possess such great characteristics of being resilient and having worked so hard, you are, in fact, acknowledging them, right? And then you're asking them to share that with another patient. So, in effect, you're doubly working it in a sense, because the patient that you've asked, you've affirmed them, and so that's a very positive thing. And now they're sharing their own positive abilities and experiences with another patient. So, you know, it's almost kind of like that old saying: what you give somebody a fish and you feed them for a day, but you teach someone to fish and then you feed them for life. So that's an excellent, and very hard. Good practice point that we should all utilize because it's brilliant.
Thank you.
So, Jen, you know, you had spoken earlier about how it was so much about making choices and empowering the patient.
Hmm. Yeah, so specifically, and Megan will attest to this because she and I are very much on the same wavelength when it comes to nutrition and patients. And the idea that I think, you know, this is going to be very controversial to say, and while I didn't completely agree with all of Dr. Swank's work, I think we have to really reexamine nutrition with our patients and the fact that what patients are putting into their mouth and, in fact, what we're all putting into our mouth significantly contributes to how we feel. Now, I definitely will never be able to show in a scientifically gold standard clinical trial that, you know, eating less preservatives, more organically, more agronomously will improve relapse rates, or maybe we could, but certainly patients who eat, you know, non-refined sugars are low in the animal products they're consuming, report to feeling better. And unfortunately, our food sources are a bit contaminated. And I think that's being illuminated more and more. I talk to patients a lot about trying to make the most colorful plate possible when
mm-hmm.
they're choosing
mm-hmm.
their food groups, and that they need to move. And even if it is moving just for a couple minutes a day, our bodies are built to move. And
right.
if they want to keep moving, they need to move. And so I really encourage them to do what they can, not to exhaustion or exertion, but a little bit every day. And I always say to them, my hope for you is that you do a little more today than you did yesterday. And if you keep going in that vein, it's success.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. I think we have two more questions actually in queue, Doug.
Yes, that is right. Our first comes from the line of Patricia Pagnotta. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, Trish.
Hi, Jen. All right, I took you off speaker there. I don't have a question. I just want to say how wonderful your presentation was and just go on to say I couldn't agree more with Dottie and Megan. But one of the things I think that we get out of these programs is the ability to hear things that we're doing in our practice that reaffirm what we're doing, but also to get little tidbits. And I just absolutely love the tidbit that you gave tonight about having someone fill out their traits before they get beaten up with MS and put that on their refrigerator and that you keep a copy of that. I think that is just such a wonderful idea. I think I'm going to start utilizing that. That is wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. We should collaborate at some point and do some type of nursing study where see if we can't validate it as an actual tool.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine that it wouldn't, but I think that it is so often when we see people early on in their disease, they can remember things about them personally before MS, but once they're years down the road and we really need them to be adherent, to be more resilient, they have sometimes gotten so lost in the disease, it'd be nice to be able to say, hey, and oftentimes their family may be disjointed or, you know, unfortunately a good number of people with MS suffer broken homes because of the disease. It would be really nice. And so I think kudos to you for doing that. And I think I'm going to start doing that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's available online. And to my knowledge, I mean, it's available publicly. So it's not something that is you have to pay for.
Well, and it'll be on the website. It'll be on the website with the podcast, too, with Jen's slides, that list.
Okay, great, great.
Character strengths, so you should be able to access it there also. Jen, I think we have one more question in queue that I think we have time for.
Yes, our next question comes from the line of Carol Saunders. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I'm
Carol.
Another one. How are you this evening? I am so thankful for this evening. This has been an outstanding program. It's what I needed. I think that little shot in the arm that what we do as nurses makes a difference. I think my one request would be that this program or something like it could be made available to some of the doctors, particularly in the area where I'm working here in California, Southern California. They don't have nurses. There's so much to do, and there's so many things that we do make a difference in, and they don't seem to realize it, and they can't make funds available to hire nurses. So this has been a shot in the arm for me, and I would love to be able to share it with some of the doctors I know here in the area.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Jen.
Thanks, Carol.
I think that would be a great idea. I really do.
Well, we'll definitely open to it. So.
Well, so we've got some research to think about doing and building on your presentation also. Doug, is there anybody else in queue?
There is nobody else in queue.
Okay.
Do you have, Lori, anything you want to share within your practice?
Well, I was trying to think. There were just so many wonderful parts, different perceptions that you brought in that I didn't really think of, and I still go back to the fact that, you know, just that there are so many things that are out of our control, you know, out of a patient's control, and, you know, how they do respond to it just really make a difference. I mean, that will be on my brain, I think, forever from right now.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as developing the relationship with the patient, how extremely important it is, and the nurses do have a very special relationship with their patients. It really has to be very trusting.
Yeah. Well, in the last couple minutes, Pat Kennedy, I want to just acknowledge, you know, she's the president of IOMFN, and she is one of my mentors and has been working with CANDU multiple sclerosis forever, it seems. But she has actually edited a new book, and it is extraordinary, and it's something that I really recommend for all of us who are practicing. You can get it on Demos Health, and it.
On what did you say? You
Demos. It's the D E M O S. The health.
Demos.
Yeah, it's the publisher. She edited it. It's actually the Can-Do Multiple Sclerosis Guide to Lifestyle Empowerment, and it's a great resource for all of us clinicians for helping our patients. And a lot of my work has really been stimulated and influenced by the work that we do at Can-Do MS. And not that I want to plug too much of Can-Do, but it is, it's the whole idea that we really focus on and get patients to start focusing on what are they capable of. But this it's one of those books that, much like June's book and the other books that we use, it's kind of one of my bedside books. It's been on my bedside table, but one of the, you know, should be in your desk as a reference. It's a great guide.
So do you think it's something that we could put on the IOMSN website, or at least a link?
We should talk to June and Pat.
If we haven't done that yet, yeah.
I mean, it's for purchase, so I don't know that
right.
It would be available, but certainly maybe they could put a link on.
Link to it that it would send you there, just to help with strategies.
Yeah,
it's
very specific, and all of the authors of the chapters are consultants with Can-Do MS, but they're all people that we all know very, very well. Neurologists, nutritionists, physical therapists. I mean, it's very comprehensive and very holistic in its approach. But it's certainly one to add to your library of MS references.
No, that sounds excellent. Just one way to look at trying to make every day a very meaningful day, I think, and remain hopeful. I think you talked quite a bit about hope throughout your presentation, and hope and empowerment, and I think resilience. I think all three of those go together.
Sure.
Okay, Doug, would you like to ask one more time? We only have a couple minutes left.
Certainly. It is *1 to ask a question.
Well, Jen, this was an excellent presentation. And as you could hear, I think from the participants who called in that they all enjoyed it and appreciated it. And I think that we can talk about next month on, it's going to be, I believe, Jill Bevan is going to be speaker for next month, and she's going to be talking on business aspects of the MS practice, and she's specifically, I think, going to focus on infusion. This is going to be a two-part series, I believe. It'll be Jill Bevan and Ann Dunn, and because of ECTRIMS, which is the second week in October, we're actually going to be moving this one. Most of them we will try to have it the second Monday in October, but this one will be the 15th. And we will send out an email blast and just remind you, so this will be the third Monday in October because of ECTRIMS. We know a lot of our colleagues are not going to be in town for that. But I do want to thank you for the presentation tonight. It was just, we all appreciate it, and I appreciate everybody's input. So really, on behalf of the IOMSN and the town hall discussions, I want to thank Jen again for her presentation.
Sorry.
It was wonderful, and for supporting the programs. And thank you to Novartis again for supporting it with the unrestricted grant. So I really hope that you'll join us next month. I think this is going to be a very interesting program on the business aspects, and we will plan on seeing you then. So thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening. This concludes tonight's meeting, and I hope you all have a good night.
Good night, Laurie.